JG2. Number 3B.
All right, so therefore, to that standpoint of health, if a course is based then not on the Christ principle God brings to us its ideal standard and takes away the first degree of mortal mind and its false beliefs and concepts, takes us to the human mind, which is half false beliefs, half ideas, and finally into the realm of the divine mind. It's really science and health, which is really health based on the mind of Christ. And as we saw, she said that all other metaphysics leave the grand point untouched. They never crown the power of mind, the divine mind, as the Messiah. And therefore, only the mind which is God is teacher in us, and only the mind which is God is student in us. And therefore, it's always a question of the divine mind speaking to the mind in us. It's never a question that we go out from ignorance about the deep things of God. We right away in Christian Science know that that all-knowing, all-intelligent mind which is God is our mind. We have no other mind than the mind which is God, and we always approach the subject that Christian Science is normal and natural. We are remembering that which we already know out from the mind of God. So it's only the principle mind which is God that can fathom these laws and understand this fixed principle in being. So we always remember that. Now, it's this impact on the world, which we will hear now as we see how these laws are defined in the world sciences today. We're not going to rush the subject. We're going to love it. It is. We're lucky to have the time to look at it this morning. And as I say, it's what Max Kepler said was the mission of the next generation, is to see how scientific text interpretation interprets the world, to see how Christian Science is the world, to see what Mrs. Eddy gave us was a universal science of all sciences. So we look forward in our methods of text interpretation to the universal realm of love and how it is being brought out everywhere. So with that listening tone of the structure of categories of reality in us, we listen now to the impact of what we know on the world sciences. And I would like to spend, therefore, time this year looking at Paul Davies' book, The Mind of God. This is a recent publication coming out, I think, 1992, last year. And his first chapter there is called The Scientific Basis for a Rational World. Now, I just want to show you where he gets this concept of the mind of God for his title. It comes from Stephen Hawking's concluding passage of his book, A Brief History of Time. Stephen Hawking, we also know as the scientist, physicist, who works out of England also. And Hawking, of course, is well regarded in the field of science today. And he has this brief paragraph in his book. He says, if we do discover a complete theory, it should in time be understandable in broad principle by everyone, not just a few scientists. Then we shall all, philosophers, scientists, and just ordinary people, be able to take part in the discussion of why it is that we and the universe exist. If we find the answer to that, it would be the ultimate triumph of human reason. For then we would truly know the mind of God. So we see that Hawking went on to give a lecture at, I believe it was at Cambridge, in England at the university where he speaks. And the title of one of his last lectures is Theoretical Physics Coming to an End? Meaning that they're looking for this complete theory of everything, the grand unified field theory that can tie together the laws of gravity with the laws of electromagnetism and the strong and weak forces. Something that I feel is answered in the model of being based on the laws of gravity. Probably something that I'd like to look at next year, building these last 92 class and 93 class, really preparing for another class which can look more in depth at tying together what we see in science with these world issues. But I do believe that this complete theory is answered by the model of being. And it can be explained, I think, that is completely understandable to the sciences and scientists of today. But that's our adventure for another time. But if we look then at these profound questions, you know, it's always important that someone asks the right question. And the scientists are asking the right questions of a new paradigm. They see that something else is coming on through their self-organizing, non-linear, your spontaneous universe where the future determines the now. They're looking forward rather than looking back. And Davies says, can the chain of explanation stop with God or with the super law of nature? Is there an ultimate level? Well, this is what the whole subject of this class is about. That, yes, that whole chain of explanation can stop with God or with what I'd like to call a supra law, S-U-P-R-A law, which is above and beyond all other laws that include them. It stands higher than, above, and it goes farther than, beyond any other law. So this would be, of course, the law of science itself. And they also say, is there an ultimate level? We would say, yes, there is, and we would consider that law of infinite being, as we will talk about on the level of science itself. Quite extraordinary, isn't it, to hear this? I mean, one can just stand in awe that Mrs. Eddy said that generic man would reveal her successor and that the earth would help the woman. So we see, and we're going to spend time here with Davies at least another hour or so, seeing the impact of this on consciousness. Then he says, can science explain everything at least in principle? Many non-scientists would deny such a claim. Most religions demand belief in some natural events, which are by definition impossible to reconcile with science. And he says, I assume that the laws of nature are obeyed at all times. Even if one rules out supernatural events, it is not clear that science could in principle explain everything in the physical universe. Why? Because there remains the old problem about the end of the explanatory chain. Scientific explanations always have starting assumptions. For example, an explanation of a phenomenon in terms of physics presupposes the validity of the laws of physics. Then he asks these questions. Always we pay note to his questions, because I'll talk about them as we go on with the laws of being, always referring back to Davies' questions. He says, where do these laws come from? What is the origin of the logic? upon which all scientific reason is founded. And then he says this, sooner or later we have to accept something as given, whether it is God, a set of laws, or logic, of which we would say yes, huh? That we would accept that as given, that there is God behind the universe, which is the comprehensive set of laws based on the infinite logic of the levels, as we have seen in Kepler's writings on the scientific logic in Christian Science. Okay, he says, ultimate questions will always lie beyond the empirical science as it is usually defined. Does this mean that deep questions of existence are unanswerable? It seems worth pursuing the path of rational inquiry to its limit, even a proof that the chain of inference is uncompletable would be worth knowing. I belong to the group of scientists who do not subscribe to a conventional religion, but there must be a deeper level of explanation. Whether one wishes to call that deeper level God is a matter of taste and definition. Also, I have come to the point of view that mind, conscious awareness of the world, is an absolutely fundamental facet of reality. Terrific basis for someone writing such a subject. Then under his heading, The Scientific Miracle, he says the success of the scientific method, he says the greatest scientific miracle of all is science works. And that's what Mrs. Eddy says also. She says we must heal ourselves of the belief that Christian Science does not work. They already know in the world today, science works. And he says scientists take it for granted that we live in a rational, ordered cosmos, subject to precise laws that can be uncovered by human reasoning. Why should human beings have the ability to discover and understand the principle on which the universe runs? Is our success in explaining the world using science and mathematics just a lucky fluke? Or is it inevitable that biological organisms, one, that have emerged from the cosmic order, should two, reflect that order in their cognitive capabilities? Is the spectacular progress of science just an incidental quirk of history? Or does this spectacular progress of science point to a deep and meaningful resonance between, one, the underlying organization of the natural world, and two, the human mind? We see, therefore, as Max has brought out so many times, that what the scientists see today, then, that those underlying laws of nature somehow also have a resonant within the human mind, that they are reflecting the same thing that life, which has emerged from the cosmic order, also reflects that order in their cognitive capabilities. The wedding of what is reality and how do I become one with this reality. Then what I feel is absolutely extraordinary. On page 21 in his book, you can jot it down if you get a hold of the book, he gives, in a nutshell, what I can see is that whole Christ idea in its translation and retranslation coming as the word vertical of law of interdependence between absolute Christian Science and Christian Science. For those of us who know the model of being from our work with the vertical laws, how the one life, which is life, truth, and love, is impelling mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. That whole law of interdependence of the Word, which is behind Matthew, and as we see behind every law of creativity going on in the world today. We'll take a look at those laws, as we well know. But he now, and I'm not changing his wording at all, I only put on the side in italics how we would see it in Christian Science. But what Paul Davies says runs right through the center of my page that I've projected on the screen, and I, for the tape audience, I will talk out. And along the left side in italics is how we see it in Christian Science. So not changing what he says as a text running down the middle. He says, and then I'll explain it how I think I see it in the light of Christian Science. He says, the scientific quest is a journey into the unknown. Each advance brings new and unexpected discoveries and challenges our minds with unusual and sometimes difficult concepts. But through it all runs the familiar thread of rationality and order. So one can see that they are on a journey into the unknown, that these scientists are not determining where science is going. And as we saw at the Max Planck Institute, they see that there is these laws of inner acceleration, life, inner logic, truth, and inner goal-directedness. So he sees with this law, I can see, you can hear the law of life where he says, we don't know where science is going, but we only know that within science itself, that each advance brings new and unexpected discoveries. We know coming right out of the infinite well of life itself. And challenges our mind. Our mind's not thinking these things. It's challenging our minds with unusual and sometimes difficult concepts of which the human mind didn't figure out. These challenges come to mind. The scientist is being thought by the law of life. And then he says, and through it all runs the familiar thread of rationality and order. And through it all runs that inner logic of truth and the inner goal-directedness of love for a purpose. And then you can hear the seven. I'll first read what he says, and then we'll come back and see the seven in it. Not changing what he says, as I said. He says, we shall see that this cosmic order is underpinned by definite mathematical laws, that they interweave each other to form a subtle and harmonious unity. The laws are possessed of an elegant simplicity and have often commended themselves to scientists on the ground of beauty alone. Yet these same simple laws permit matter and energy to self-organize into an enormous variety of complex states, including those that have the quality of consciousness and can in turn reflect upon the very cosmic order that has produced them. That's evolution in a nutshell. It's just absolutely awe-inspiring. And we say, you know, in the Time magazine, what does science tell us about God? Everything. Because we're seeing that, again, that we're in the age of love. And at this point, it's impersonal. Again, Mrs. Eddy says in the sixth chapter, which I love in Science, Theology, and Medicine under theology, that her subject isn't such that it is kings and queens crowned from a royal dynasty. It isn't as such that her subject is passed from one holy person to the next holy person, and then we wonder who the next holy person is that will wear the crown of Christian Science. She said, what I have discovered is not, and I repeat, that kings and queens are crowned from a royal dynasty. Just love it. Which would make it spiritualism, which would make us go to those kings and queens as a Saul, the wizard, the peep, to give us our teaching, to give us our practice, to give us our understanding, that it isn't tied within any organization in a universal sense, that what she gave was not an organized religion called Christian Science, as we know now from her manual, but in the third degree, what she gave us was the Church Universal and Triumphant. That means this is a universal science and its law, applicable to everyone. How can we say that God is just raining on a few Christian Scientists that are studying the Bible and studying the textbook according to the structure of being and its laws? It's silly. Just silly. The only thing is that we can see that the Bible and the textbook do go together, that the Judean and Christian heritage is completed through the Bible in the textbook, and that whole method of revelation, all those inspired prophets and revelators were working through revelation, giving us the structure of the Bible in the textbook. She said there will come a time when revelation and reason coincide. So what we have seen through the Bible and the textbook through revelation, and the world has struggled through becoming more and more transparent to higher and higher logic, eventually the discoveries will coincide at this age of universal science. She saw it. She saw you can't tie it to a religion. That's why she fought it. She says, what I have given this is a universal science. This is the science of all sciences. Don't make me put it into a religion. You're going to suffer from it. And that's what Samuel said. He said, if you asked, he says, I teach through prophecy. Samuel's mother gave Samuel back to God at the point of the 4,000-year period of principle. And Samuel taught through prophecy. But we know the children of Israel wanted a king, and they wanted Saul, the highest and the best and the most intellectual and brightest of them all. And Samuel said, you're going to suffer. You'll have to go to war for this king, follow the king. You'll have to do everything, follow personal sense, personal revelators. It'll get you nowhere. And where David came in and said, yes, that's right. Everything has to be principle-based. And Jesus certainly said, don't call me good, call the Father. And Mrs. Eddy certainly said, I'm only a scribe under orders. Follow me insofar as I follow Christ. Therefore, we can see then that this listening, as the scientists are now doing, turning away from the past to the future, listening to that higher order that is breaking in on the world, this naturally comes to them as a universal science. And therefore, we feel at ease in seeing that somebody like a Davies can put into order through inspiration, the law of interdependence of the word order. So we see then that we saw life, truth, and love. Now we know that mind stands for laws, and spirit for order, and soul for rules based on beauty and symmetry, and principles standing for that harmonious system of self-organization. So when we read Davies again, you can hear those synonymous terms, where he says, we shall see that this cosmic order is underpinned by definite mathematical laws, the tonality of mind and spirit, that interweave each other to form subtle, soul, those subtle laws of harmonious unity, principle. And that these laws are possessed of an elegant simplicity and have often commended themselves to scientists on the ground of beauty alone, soul. That these laws are simple, they're elegant, they're subtle, they're beautiful, and they're interwoven within the harmonious unity of principle. And then he says, yet these same simple laws permit matter and energy to self-organize, principle. And then we can hear in what he says here that they self-organize into enormous variety of complex states That would be that sense of life, that these laws are always self-organizing them, always new, always higher, into enormous variety of complex states. We see that as we high, as that's what has happened with life, as we spiral higher and higher into greater and greater complexity. Complexity doesn't mean we don't understand it. It just means it brings out higher and higher a variety of a state. So he sees that we go higher and higher into enormous variety of complexity, that spirit. Spirit evolves into higher and higher states of complexity. And he says, and that higher and higher evolution into higher and higher states of complexity had the result of the quality of consciousness, which we see as truth. He says, and this then a result of the quality of consciousness coming into evolution is such that that consciousness can now look back and reflect upon the very cosmic order that has produced it, love. God conscious of itself, called man. Huh? It's just beautiful. I guess one can't use anything except that sense of that it's beauty. So he then, just before our break, we'll take a look at this next point. He then says, as we've talked about briefly, among the more ambitious goals of such reflection is a possibility that we might be able to formulate a theory of everything. A complete description of the world in terms of a closed system of logical truths. The idea that all physical laws could be unified into a single mathematical scheme. The search for TOE, the theory of everything, has become something of a holy grail for the physicist. If the universe is a manifestation of rational order, then we might be able to deduce the nature of the world from pure, pure thought alone, without the need for observation. Therefore, opening the discovery of the theory of everything to inspiration and not observation, they are looking then, their goal is to formulate this theory of everything. As I said, I know we have it in the model of being. A model, he says, which is a complete description of the world in terms of a closed system. Isn't that how we see the model of being? As a theory of everything in terms of a closed system, as we see in divine science, of logical truths. We see the logic of the levels. And we see that the idea of all laws can be unified into a single scheme. And so therefore we see that what they're asking for this theory of everything is something that we know then that we have found in the model of being.